So I would say that when we look at excessive screen time, we have to look at it in terms of, is this productive screen time or is it just kind of mindless surfing and is it for recreation? More and more people are using AI for companionship, even for mental health benefits and therapy. I'm wary of it. When we have a vision of the future, it gives us hope, which can keep depression at bay. However, when people use excessive screen time and they get addicted to it, it takes away from their ability to have goals and to work towards the future, depleting hope. So I feel people's mental states are being exploited for economic purposes too. If you don't have the dopamine because it's just getting depleted on screens, then it's going to be very hard for children to focus and do well in school. This screen has become a type of babysitter for children.
You're tuned into the Active Action Podcast. Step into a world of engaging conversations with leading experts, where every episode is your chance to learn, grow, and stay inspired. Become our premium supporter and get access to expert articles and strategy guides on personal and professional development, and enjoy lots of other exclusive features. Visit our website activeaction.fm for more information and to explore all episodes. Don't forget to check our merchandise for exciting goodies at activeaction.shop. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode.
Hello and good morning, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Active Action Podcast. It's your host, Dr. Nazif, back with you again with another video, with another amazing topic and guest. Before delving into the discussion, just wanted to take this opportunity to shout out to all the audiences who are keeping sticking with us. And we really do appreciate your constant engagement and support with the podcast. Just wanted to let you know we did start our premium supporters program. So if you do want to get access to premium contents on personal and professional development, health and fitness, and lots of other exclusive features and perks, don't forget to support us on Patreon in www.activeaction.fm/support or patreon.com/activeaction. Apart from that, we did start our merch. So if you want to take a look at some high quality clothing lines, scented candle, water bottles, and other goodies, feel free to visit www.activeaction.shop. Apart from that, let's just begin into our episode today. And today we have with us Dr. Weber. How are you doing, Dr. Weber?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on your show today, Dr. Nazif.
Thank you so much, Dr. Weber. And we really appreciate you giving your valuable time within your busy schedule to spend a few minutes with our audience this morning and talk about how excessive screen time impacts mental health. We know excessive screen time is indeed a very big concern at today's modern era where everything has literally turned into digital. There is social media. People are using computer screens and other digital devices more rather than pen and paper that they used to do in earlier days. So screen time is indeed a big factor in our life, whether we are in our youths or in our mid-age or even in the elderly. Before delving into the podcast, I just wanted to introduce you guys a bit about Dr. Weber. Dr. Weber is a licensed clinical psychologist with a focus on holistic health. In her private practice, she works with individuals, couples, and families to optimize mental health. And she's thrilled to introduce Thrive Together as a primary course offering. Thrive Together combines the personal attention of individualized sessions with the dynamic growth of a vital group program designed to help participants build stronger relationships and enhance emotional well-being. With such a diverse background and topics to discuss, and with the psychological background that Dr. Weber brings, I'm really hopeful that we'll have a very fruitful discussion that would be valuable for our audiences. So, Dr. Weber, do you want to introduce yourself a bit apart from what I just said to our audiences?
Well, you said a lot on my introduction. So I used to work in the tech industry before I went to grad school, where I was in business development at a large corporation and also a Series D funded startup. So I do have some experience in the tech industry as well. And I'm a mother of two kids. I did my clinical training in the Palo Alto and San Francisco Unified School Districts. So yeah, that's pretty much my background.
That's wonderful, Dr. Weber. I want to discuss you a bit about excessive screen time. So I did talk about a bit about screen time before, but can I ask from your professional background, how do we define excessive screen time? And is there a threshold where screen users becomes harmful to mental health at some point?
Thank you. So I would say that when we look at excessive screen time, we have to look at it in terms of, is this productive screen time or is it just kind of mindless surfing and is it for recreation? So in today's world, oftentimes we have to be on screens for work. I do virtual therapy, so I'm on screens a lot. I do have a blue blocker on my screen to limit the blue light exposure. But I would say, yes, it can become harmful. Even over spending a lot of time on Zoom, there's a delay, which can cause a little bit of stress where I will see your body cues and your facial expressions, but the audio comes in a little bit delayed. So in that delay, my brain is scanning to see why isn't it congruent. And that can create some anxiety over hours and days.
Thank you so much for explaining that, Dr. Weber. So you mentioned about blue screen a bit. Can you tell our audiences what actually blue screen is and what actually it does in terms of providing some support with screen viewing and things?
Okay, I'm not the best to describe the biological effects of blue light, but it does help. What it does is it can stimulate a lot of dopamine to be released. And so if you have a lot of dopamine being released from your brain, at first it will cause you to be hyper-focused on the screen.
Oh, okay.
But then you can have a dopamine crash and it'll be harder for you to focus on other things in your life. And when you get off a long day of work or a screen, you can be more irritable with people in your home life because of not having enough dopamine.
Okay. That's very helpful to know. Thank you so much, Dr. Weber. So when we talk about screen time, there are different scenarios or situations where we have to use the screen. Sometimes that is for work purpose. Sometimes that is for leisure, but it's all connected to the screen somehow. So can I ask you, in terms of screen time effect on mental health, what's the difference between necessary screen time and recreational screen time? And how do their effects differ on mental health?
Sure. Okay, well, I would say that if it's possible to do more work even off screens, I have an educational consultant I work with. Her name is Dr. Elizabeth Hansen, and she recommends keeping kids off screen for work and school even. But the difference is that with just excessive time, there's a lot more. We can get recreation in a more embodied way. One issue I have with screen time for recreation is that it leads to sensory disintegration. Sensory disintegration, my eyes and my ears are on the screen, but my sense of touch, my smell, and taste are in a different reality. This type of sensory disintegration can lead to stress and anxiety. In the mental health world, a tool that we have to help people manage anxiety is the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise, where you look at 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, 3 things you touch, 2 things you smell, and 1 thing you taste. And by bringing all your senses to one point in a focus, it's supposed to calm a person down. But excessively being on screens, we're not able to do that. And it makes it harder to be in the present moment and grounded. There was a study by Sangha Lee in 2022 that showed that children in low-income houses spend more time on screen than other children. Hmm. And in 2020, I went to a training with the California Psychological Association, and they said that children in low-income households will spend an average of 2 hours more on screens than children who are not in these low-income households. So it does become a class issue on mental health and class and excessive screen time.
Okay. That's very interesting to know. And I really appreciate the knowledge that you shared about the 5-4-3-2-1 method. I haven't heard of that before. I have a follow-up question on that to you, Dr. Weber. For recreational time, we can encourage individuals to get away from screen and do something active other than being in the digital realm. For individuals who use screen for the work purpose, they use the screen for a prolonged period of time. We know it has different impacts on our brain, but we'll discuss that a bit later. But for the individuals who are using screen for the work purpose, what can actually they do to reduce that time, to have the impact of the screen on them, to minimize that impact? What can they do in that aspect?
Sure. Yeah, they can take some breaks every 20 minutes, if possible, to look away from the screen, just kind of look over, you know, and take your gaze away from the screen, and maybe get up every hour and kind of move around. That can be helpful. On the back end, I would say if you work on a screen a lot, then when it comes to recreation, don't use the screen for recreation, since you're already saturating your screen time with work. It's not always possible, though, to look away from the screen every 20 minutes. That's the problem. Some of the healthy habits don't really work in today's work world. Like, for example, if I'm giving a meeting and I'm participating in a meeting, I have to look like I'm engaged and giving eye contact. And I can't just look away every 20 minutes, right? It's just a fact. So it's kind of a difficult situation how to fit healthy habits into this new work and school environment. For example, I have clients who are executives, and they will tell me that they're in 5 hours of Zoom meetings back to back in that work day. So I don't think that they can necessarily look away every 20 minutes from the call, but maybe they can, between meetings, leave a 10-minute buffer to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very helpful to know. Yeah.
There is actually something that I wanted to talk about on the use of AI and mental health, because more and more people are using AI for companionship, even for mental health benefits and therapy. I'm wary of it. So I wanted to speak about why I'm wary of it, if that's okay.
Yes, for sure. Please go ahead, Dr. Rick.
Okay. So let's look at dialectical behavioral therapy. It has this concept called wise mind. And if you can imagine for a second, wise mind is a Venn diagram where one circle is your rational mind and the other circle is your emotional mind, kind of marrying your left hemispheres of your brain. And where these two circles intersect in the Venn diagram, this is where wisdom is. So we know that AI does not have the capacity for wisdom because it's hyper-rational, reasonable mind. So it's not balancing emotions with this rationality. So it's not leading to wisdom. So I think people may be excessively depending on it for mental health and guidance and companionship are walking on thin ice there. And also, and I'm going to pull from different schools of psychology. So that's dialectical behavioral therapy, where it says wisdom is this intersection between emotions and rational mind. And we know that values, AI doesn't have values, but values are not emotionally neutral. Mm-hmm. So our reliance on AI is going to lead to maybe just hyper-rational sense, like the faculty of rationality becomes out of balance, is no longer the middle path. In Buddhism and even in the Islamic histories of mental health. Buddhism will say we walk the middle path. But in Islamic mental health, like in Iran, they had some scholars like Al-Ghazali and Avicenna that talked on psychology. And they would talk about balancing our faculties. The faculties that they talked about is a triangle of anger, appetites, and reason. And in the same way, we want to balance anger so that we don't have so much anger that we're reckless. And we also don't have so little anger that we're a coward. We want to balance it so we can be brave, right? In the same way with rationality and reason, we don't want to have so much reason, logic, cerebral over here, AI, that's out of balance. And we don't want to have too little either. We want to balance it so we have that wisdom that's hitting on dialectical behavioral therapy. We want to balance it. And even in Freud, in psychodynamic therapy, he will say intellectualization and rationalization are defense mechanisms. And we need defense mechanisms. They're the bark on a tree. If you take away the bark from the tree will catch diseases and it will die. But we want to have it in moderation, and we want to be able to use other defense mechanisms and not just this hyper-rational direction that people are going with AI. And I think that this is also a way that mental health can be affected moving forward.
That's wonderful. And thank you so much, Dr. Wei, for explaining that. It's very important, I think, also to understand taking their own perception for mental health and well-being and completely not relying on AI. AI has wider impact on people as how things are being automated, and it's kind of a machine learning that's learning and feeding through our activities and then using that more wisely. But I think if we do still use AIs for our mental health and other well-being, it's not always the fruitful. I prefer, instead of an AI, to talk to an actual person to talk about my mental health and well-being and get advice from that and not depend on machine altogether. So that's just my perspective, but I really appreciate that context that you provide, Dr. Weber. Can I ask you a question? We know excessive screen time has impact on our health and mental well-being. So from your experience, what are the most common mental health consequences of excessive screen time? And how do they affect emotional well-being?
Sure. Well, I think that it's important to have goals in our life for emotional well-being. We need to be moving, have a sense of a future vision grounded in the present. And also when we have a vision of the future, it gives us hope, which can keep depression at bay. However, when people use excessive screen time and they get addicted to it, it, you know, takes away from their ability to have goals and to work towards the future, depleting hope. And I think this has emotional consequences. This is a really big topic, but there's also a whole lot to say about social media and bullying. You could talk about people comparing their lives to influencers who are only posting good things, young women with body issues because of social media. There's just a lot of more pitfalls that kids can fall into. When I was growing up, I didn't have to learn, don't talk to strangers on the internet, don't send personal information on the internet, don't send photos of myself on the internet. You know, I didn't have to learn all of these things. It's a lot more complicated for young people now.
And at our time, there wasn't the internet that much of accessible, or it didn't have that functionalities that the current generation actually has access to. Especially in terms of social media, it's a great tool, I can say, but it's a very complex tool where they bring people together. And sometimes that is good, but oftentimes it might not be good because you're then getting connected with people who you think is better, but maybe they're impersonating a character in social media, which they are not in real life. So there is this complexity that comes in that didn't happen with our generation. So it's indeed food for thought on how the social media is impacting our next generation and how we can actually, what we can do ourselves to make it more better for them.
I was just going to say that with social media companies have they try to recruit top talent, some of the smartest people in the world, to work on the issue of how to get more people on these apps. So I feel people's mental states are being exploited for economic purposes too, and that should be taken into consideration as well.
Right. Indeed, I agree with you, Dr. Weber. Can I ask you this question in a bit detail? We know that the prolonged screen time has impact on our brain, but for further understanding of our audiences, can you explain to them how does prolonged screen use impact the brain function, attention span, and impulse control, particularly in children and adolescents who use them the most?
Sure. So I mentioned it a little bit earlier. I talked about dopamine and how being on screens depletes dopamine. When you have this depletion of dopamine is what you need to pay attention, and you need to be able to focus and have impulse control. So if you don't have the dopamine because it's just getting depleted on screens, then it's going to be very hard for children to focus and do well in school. So yeah, it does affect children and adolescents this way. When I worked in the Palo Alto Unified School District as a counselor, and my interviews with parents, I used to ask them what time policies were for their children. And there is, let's say, three groups that I would see. There's the group that doesn't give any limits on screen time to the children. And there's the group that would say, okay, you could have unlimited on the weekend. Then there's a group that would say, okay, 1 hour a day or 30 minutes a day. But if you look at the families that were trying to track their children to college and had lofty goals for their children, these families usually restrict screen time for their children because it's just taking away. There's six domains that children have to succeed in to get into a good university. And if you're spending, let's say, hours on a screen, in the California Psychological Association training I went to, they said that children are spending 5 to 7 hours on screens a day.
Right.
That's 5 to 7 hours they're not working and focusing on their vision for their life. They're just sort of entertaining themselves. I don't even think that excessive entertainment is good for character development.
Not at all. I agree with you, Dr. Weber. How you did mention about character development, and I think that is one thing I also want to mention, Dr. Weber. We see at this time, even when we are growing our kids up and when they are very young, suppose at the age of even 1 or 1.5, 2, we give an iPad to them. And if you want to watch a cartoon, you have to eat. If you want to watch the cartoon, you have to do this chore or take care of yourself. I think at some point, giving a screen to such a little person or a little aged kids is, I don't think it's kind of appropriate. Sometimes it's helpful for them to learn things and to interact. They do in TV, watching cartoons, but personally, I feel giving them an iPad and they actually get attached to it. And at certain points I've seen in my professional career that children who are given iPad at a very little age, they tend to get stuck to it and they cannot even want to do other things without seeing the iPad or without having to carry it. I personally feel that's not a healthy situation. And just like you mentioned, that using screen time for little ones to have them do the work or to grow into a better person, I don't think that actually always works. We can give them the screen at some point, but as parents, we have to make that time certain when they can use the screen or when they cannot, just to make it a bit more healthy.
Sure. Yeah, this screen has become a type of babysitter for children. Parents are, it didn't used to be that we just had the nuclear family that had to raise children. It used to be that there was extended relatives and family members, like traditional communities, where that were helping with childcare. So now there's not that. So I'm not trying to shame parents, because I understand that they just don't have the resources that they used to have. But definitely, it's not good to give children iPads and screens just to have some quiet moments, or for the example, the convenience of the people around you at the restaurant, I was at your children's expense. I think that if a child can't sit with discomfort and the parents can't tolerate some discomfort and emotionality from the child, you know, every time the child has some discomfort or boredom, we pull creativity from boredom. And if so, we can never be bored. And the children from 1 year old is given an iPad, every time they start to get bored and fuss, they're not going to ever learn this as well. They'll learn maybe some, but not as well. Regulate emotions that come up with boredom. And it's on the other end of regulating those emotions is we can be creative. We can build things. And yeah, I think that's a good point that you brought up. The American Pediatric Association has limits on screen time for children. And I think that in the future, I would like to see the American Psychological Association also coming up with limits. But at the moment, there's not any limits that the American Psychological Association has come up with. But I think for the Pediatric Association, it might be 1 hour a day or something like that.
One thing we're discussing today over and over again is why children, or why even young adults and even people in our age, are so much attracted to screen, watching screen in different forms and format. What do you think, what makes technology so addictive? And how can individual recognize the signs of this dependency on technology?
Sure. I think that technology is addictive for different reasons. Like for, let's say, boys, who, not all boys play more video games than girls. Some girls play more video games than boys. But let's just talk about video games for a second. It gives boys a sense of mastery, like instant mastery, being powerful. And I think that that is addictive and seductive for young boys who maybe are having a hard time with sense of self through adolescence or something like that, to have this mastery and power in this virtual world. For girls who are more likely to be on social media, and again, these are just general themes. It's not, there's overlap, of course, but being able to get instant gratification of belonging or being appreciated and valued, I think it gives a feel-good moment. And so it becomes addictive to have that. Recognizing a sign of technology dependence. Well, one big sign is that it's impairing their academic and social functioning, or their responsibilities at home. Are they showering? Are they doing chores? Are they still engaging with their friends in person? Are they pushing themselves academically or in sports? So when you start to see that the functionality in their life is going down, that's a good sign that there is tech dependency. So meltdown when the technology is taken away. I have limits for my children on tech. And even with that, I have this limit. When I take the iPad, time is up for my kid on his device, and I take it away, he tries to negotiate for more time. And he gets upset. I'm pretty good when I won't negotiate. It's non-negotiable. But if I don't have these really solid limits in place, I have seen that children will have meltdowns.
Yeah, indeed they have.
And that, I think, is a sign of addiction. We see variety with adults even. Like, even I have had this anxiety where I can't find my phone for a few minutes, or where is my phone? And it creates some anxiety. Or I left the house and I don't have my phone, or maybe I left it somewhere. and there's that anxiety. So I think that it's really a pandemic of sorts and affecting all types of people.
Indeed, Dr. Weber. And I think one of the reasons that you brought up that using devices and technology in our adult life as ourselves, I think is because everything is kind of adapting to digital right now. People used to write letters. Now email is a constant part of our life. We used to use pen and paper in our work before, but we are now using laptops. Offices are giving you laptops, desktops. Everything is now digital. And even there isn't a way you cannot go into the past. You cannot do like pen and paper things and do the facts because it's much time consuming. So you have to stay active. You have to do a lot of things in a short amount of time, which is only achievable by digital means. And you have to be connected into the online world for clients to communicate or to people to work with. I see this as a one-way road to digital growth. And that is actually leading us to have a lot of influence or a lot of connection with digital stuff. That's the reason why you mentioned we cannot stay with our phone for a few minutes, but we cannot stay without any sorts of digital stuff within our life, even for an hour. I'm sure if someone is get isolated in a room for 24 hours without any digital stuff, that actually have a wave effect on their mental health. And we have seen YouTubers doing that, and it's not an easy thing to do. So it just indicates how much dependent we are at now with this digital era. Can I ask you one question for the benefit of our audiences? What are some of the practical strategies to reduce screen time and develop a healthier digital habits without feeling deprived?
Yeah, great question. So in my trainings, I've tried to focus on my continuing education training on this topic. They're saying cognitive behavioral therapy is a strategy that's being talked about to reduce screen time. Group therapy for people who are addicted to technology is an effective treatment. You get to hear other people's stories and stuff that, and feel you're not alone in this. Well, another thing that I think is really helpful is just spending time in nature, because sort of an eco-therapy. And spending time in nature is good because when we're on screens, we have a very focused vision. Our perspective becomes very focused, on the screen. But when we go out in nature, our vision and perspective becomes peripheral, right? We have to think like, okay, who are the people around us? Are there any mountain lion? We have to be aware of predators that might be out there. It expands our vision, and we get to see that we have a small but meaningful role in the order of the universe. But when we're on screens, it's very egocentric. Like it's me and who I'm chatting with, what they're responding, or how I'm in the game, or these emails become very me-centric. So I would say as an antidote, that going out into nature and just tapping into the peripheral vision, and checking into our small but meaningful place in the order of things can help out with our mental health as well. On this point, I would say that when we can expand our vision and it's not just super focused on one thing, it is more peripheral and it's zooming out to see the bigger picture. This kind of generalist perspective helps us to connect the dots between different disciplines, different concepts in life, different facets of life. And until we can widen our perspective, it's hard to wire our brain to connect these dots that way.
That very valuable advice. And thank you so much, Dr. Weber, for sharing that for the benefit of our audiences. I'm really sure my audiences got that as very helpful information. Can I ask you, Dr. Weber, I know you are a clinical psychologist and you do private practice. So how do my audiences can get in touch with you? And what type of support do you provide in terms of psychological and mental well-being for your clients?
Sure. Thank you. So I have a private practice. It's mostly filled up. I do have people drop off, and then I'm able to bring in new clients. I would say look on my website, www.drozadeweber.com. I am filling groups right now in an effort to serve more people because my individual practice is usually full. I am offering two groups, Thrive Together, which talks about social and emotional skills, confidence building. And I'm also doing a group called Rise and Root, which focuses on yoga, vagus nerve reset exercises, and visualization techniques. So I do that as well. I am also a certified yoga instructor. So in addition to clinical psychology, I'm kind of merging those in that. So people in those, they can reach out to me on my website.
Thank you so much, Dr. Weber, for sharing that. And you have a lot of expertise in many different fields. So I really hope our audiences would find value to whatever they're looking for with that support. And I really encourage the audiences to seek out at Dr. AZADEHWEBER.com to see support on the group settings. And if you do have any questions for Dr. Weber, you can also connect with her through the website Dr. Azadeh Weber, but also if you go to our website activeaction.fm, if you search Dr. Weber's name, Azadeh-Weber, AZADEH-Weber, you will see her webpage there. So it has information about her bio, but also links to all her socials. So you can indeed get in touch with her in that way if you want. Apart from that, Dr. Weber, I really appreciate you coming into this podcast today and sharing your words of wisdom about screen time and mental health and well-being with our audiences.
My pleasure. I enjoyed being here. Thank you, Dr. Nizzi, for the conversation. I enjoyed it and the opportunity to talk on a topic I am passionate about.
Sure. I really appreciate it of having you as well. Take care. We'll keep in touch and hope to see you in one of our future episodes as well. Dear listeners, we were talking with our wonderful guest, Dr. Weber, today on the topic of screen time and its effect and impact on mental health. We really did get to learn a lot about the impact of what screen time has on different ages of individuals, even they are young kids or even adults. And some very, very helpful practical tips and tricks on how you can reduce screen times and use that to your benefit. Thank you so much for joining us into this podcast. I hope you found this helpful. If you did, please feel free to share this with your friends and family or anyone you think might benefit from the discussion that we had today. And finally, if you do find value in our content, don't forget to provide us a tip in our virtual tip jar at www.activeaction.fm/tip. We'll be back with you again next week with another episode. Until then, stay positive, stay active, and take action. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on the Active Action Podcast at activeaction.fm. We hope today's episode gave you some entertainment, fresh perspectives, and a little extra motivation to take action in your own life. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed the show, share it with someone who might love it too. Oh, one more thing. Become our premium supporter and get access to expert articles and strategy guides on personal and professional development, and enjoy lots of other exclusive features. Get started for free. Visit our website, activeaction.fm/supporter, for more information. Take care, stay active, and take action.
You're tuned into the Active Action Podcast. Step into a world of engaging conversations with leading experts, where every episode is your chance to learn, grow, and stay inspired. Become our premium supporter and get access to expert articles and strategy guides on personal and professional development, and enjoy lots of other exclusive features. Visit our website activeaction.fm for more information and to explore all episodes. Don't forget to check our merchandise for exciting goodies at activeaction.shop. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode.